friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I are tuned into the Tim and Friends Show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Still getting dressed in here. Tim and Friends for this Thursday, April 15th, 2021, live from the Sportsnet studios. For now, I'm Tim McAuliffe. Thank you for being a friend. It is a play-by-play Thursday as the friends of the show coming in to help today. All big-time voices on the play-by-play scene. Dan Shulman, Matt Devlin, Adnan Virk. An old friend, but the brand spanking new voice of the WWE's Monday Night Raw, Adnan Virk, which you can see live right here on Sportsnet 360. You also know the other guys, Raptors, Jays, ESPN, all that stuff. This show is on 360. It's on 590 and Sportsnet, at least until Hockey Central takes over the airwaves on Sportsnet, 6:30 Eastern. And the top story of the day in hockey appears to be off the ice as the Vancouver Canucks met with the PA last night. And today we were expecting news on whether or not the schedule would stand as written starting tomorrow and playing 19 games in 31 days for the Vancouver Canucks coming off of COVID-19. Now, this is still an ongoing story and we will keep an eye on it for you. But the latest that we are hearing is that Friday's game sounds like it could be postponed, and Saturday's against the Leafs may still be up in the air. Now, for those wondering if the NHL or the team or the PA's medical protocols have changed in all of this, as of right now, they haven't. What has changed is that the players' concerns were heard last night when JT Miller first verbalized what many were thinking about the Canucks situation. And then again, in a meeting with the PA. Look, we heard 19 games in 31 days and wondered how in the good name of Harold Sneps they were going to pull this off. But it wasn't unprecedented. The Devils, like the Canucks, had 21 players on the COVID list and returned to play with just 15 days between games and one practice. But it's the variant that is in play in Vancouver, which has made this one hit more players and two hit those players harder. So as of right now, it's still undecided. Dan Murphy and Chris Johnston are scheduled to give us the absolute latest in about 50 minutes time as we learn more about what is happening with the Canucks and their return to play. So we'll get you all that coming up a little bit later on. That is the latest as we know it right now. And we'll be all over Twitter with Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnson, all the insiders giving us the absolute latest, including Ian McIntyre and Dan Murphy. Okay, got it good. And since we understood, at least for now, I'm not sure anyone can tell me how in the good name of Reggie Slater the Raptors beat the Spurs last night. Second half of back-to-backs with a record of 1-11 in the previous back ends of 2-2 nights. But somehow, even with all the players resting, injured, and out, the Raptors pulled it off. I'm not sure who it speaks to more, the Raptors or the Spurs, but we will attempt to answer that a little later on when Matt Devlin, pops by. And we've got the number 42 up in studio for Jackie Robinson Day or days across the bigs. We will see the Jays in Kansas City looking to build off their series win against the Yankees. And Donovan Bennett in studio to discuss Major League Baseball trying to live up to their own words on the day that we honor number 42 across the bigs. Now, after much deliberation, much consternation, we still don't know who the Jays are going to go with tonight. Is it going to be Anthony Kay? Is it going to be Tanner Roark? Is it a bullpen day? Do we have a starter? What do we got? Shai Davidi did tell us Kay traveled to KC today. Now, Charlie Montoyo will speak at 6 Eastern and fill us in. I'm voting for the lefty and then a four-man rotation with days off, all four lefties. But that's because I'm a lefty and left is right and right is wrong. Sebby's a lefty, too, so he gave me the, without giving me the, he just kind of gave me the point. Just lefties stick together. The Royals start Jacob Junis. Somewhere along the line, I guarantee you that was Jakob Junis, but I digress. Either way, I'm not sure either are in line with what we saw yesterday or in line with what we saw yesterday on the south side of Chicago.
First things first.
All right, let's be honest. No hitters aren't all that action-packed. Often, they're not the most exciting, and there have been 307 of them. But the drama of last night's top of the ninth inning between the White Sox and Cleveland was better than YNR. Yes, that drama made Carlos Rodon's no-no look a little bit different, and it demonstrated just how fine the line is between perfect and almost perfect. Okay, here's the situation. My parents went away for a week's vacation. Sorry, wrong situation. Rodon entered the ninth inning having faced the minimum 24 batters, and the Pale Hose had built an 8-0 lead. Up first was Mississauga's Josh Naylor, who nearly beat out an infield single sliding head first. Naylor was called out on the field, and that was upheld. But the suspense of the replay review had us 25 up, 25 down. Next batter was catcher Roberto Perez, and with the count 1-2, a slider got away from Rodon, hitting Perez on the top of the foot, ending Rodon's bid at the first perfect game in the majors since 2012. Instead, he finished off the final two batters to complete the first no-hitter since last week. Yes, that close. You could just feel it. He was this close. To his credit, Rodon took it in stride.
And I threw it, and it just took off like one of those snakes. And I go, oh, there goes the toe ball. And, you know, you hear that clunk. And I was like, mother. So all you can do is laugh about it. I mean, it wasn't meant to be.
So it wasn't meant to be. Oh, mother. I always say perspective is often expensive, and you may just have seen that in Rodon. Like, listen, it's been a long road. He was a former third overall pick, but he struggled with injuries in recent years. He had his second surgery in as many years undergoing Tommy John in 2019, and he hit a new low when he was non-tendered by the very Sox he was playing for last night after last season, instead re-signing on a one-year, $3 million deal. But last night may never have even happened if he hadn't been scratched from his scheduled start on Monday due to an upset stomach. Rodon's no-no is the second in the majors this season after the Padres' Joe Musgrove last Friday. And get this, since 1901, there have been 263 no-hitters, but only six where the only base runner was the result of someone being hit by a pitch. And two of those, Musgrove and last night, happened in the last 5 days. Now, there are a lot of fans who were upset that Roberto Perez didn't try to get out of the way of the pitch with the score 8-0. After the game, Perez said he wasn't fully aware of the situation, saying, and I quote, remember, this is a catcher. To be honest, I really didn't think he had a perfect game until I got hit. I thought he had a no-hitter going on, but I really didn't think he had a perfect game. So it's hard, man. I'm not going to try to stand there and get hit, you know? Rodon wasn't placing any blame on the Cleveland catcher as well.
He did the right thing. He stayed in there. He said, I'm going to let it hit me. You ain't getting a perfect game. And I would do the same thing if I was hitting. You got to earn it.
And there are some interesting debates. Is there any way that Perez, a catcher, wasn't aware that Rodon had a perfect game? That's what some people are saying on Twitter right now, and that he should have tried to get out of the way. I don't know. Listen, if I'm standing there, I would have done the exact same thing. I would have hung in there. I would have took it on the toe. I would have marched up to first base because I never give up on anything. What would you have done?
First things first.
All right, some other random stats for you in all this. White Sox catcher Zach Collins, who played against Rodon in high school, was making just his 15th career start behind the plate, catches the near-perfect game. Tony La Russa has now managed 4 no-hitters. Only 5 managers in Major League history have done it more often. And La Russa's hiring took a lot of criticism, but you know an old-school manager isn't pulling a starter with a no-hitter going, which we have seen happen more often because of analytics driving decision-making. In fact, since 2017, 29 players have been pulled with a no-hitter going through 5. Jesse, where are you and where are the audience? Because we know that we put this out a little earlier to our audience to see what they would say.
Yeah, so just quickly before we get to the responses, these two teams playing this afternoon, and maybe a little bit of carryover from what we saw last night. So why don't we have a look at the video?
What's going on?
And we can decide whether we think there's some chippiness that's a carryover. So that's Adam Eaton sliding into second base. And here we go. The benches, you know, it takes a while for this to develop.
So this is baseball fight here.
This is a baseball fight. And
this isn't a fight.
As they say, cooler heads did prevail. Yeah. But these two teams clearly don't like each other. We don't know for sure. The game's still ongoing.
He's blocking the bag.
So it could be an unrelated incident in this case, but it's pretty obvious at this point that these two teams don't like each other very much.
Do you think, and listen, we'll get to the Tim and Friends.
Yep.
But do you think this has anything to do with last night?
No, okay. I don't. Okay. But later in the game, Adam Eaton got hit by a pitch. We have that video too. He walked to first base and nothing came of it. But I think that's actually an isolated incident. I don't think it's a carryover from last night. Because of the way that Carlos Rodon handled it. And I think that team probably took its cues from Rodon's response.
If he was pissed, I agree with you.
Yeah, if he was pissed, I think it would have been. So Eaton got hit because of the situation at second base.
For those who don't know, you don't have to move. You can't lean in. That's right. The rule in baseball. You don't. If a pitch is coming at you and you think that you can take it in the back and it's going 60 miles an hour, you don't have to move.
Exactly.
You are entitled to your position. However, if you lean into it, then the umpire could say.
Exactly. So we asked the question, based on last night's game, should Roberto Perez have done more to get out of the way of Rodon's pitch? And at the beginning, most of the answers were basically no. Mike says, the game being 8-0, you're basically playing to break up the perfect game. Rodon could have thrown a better pitch. Fair is fair. Mm-hmm. We have more responses.
Okay.
TJ says, nope, perfect games are supposed to be hard. If you wanted to be perfect, you should have not hit the batter. Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does make some sense. Although, let's be honest, how many times out of 10 does that ball, same pitch, not hit the batter because the batter just raises his foot?
A lot. I mean, it was unfortunate that
what do you think the number is? 5?
Probably.
6?
Yeah, 5. I'd say 5.
Half the time, that pitch, a guy just lifts his foot.
Yep.
And it doesn't hit him.
Unfortunate circumstance, especially after the play that Abreu made at first base. Because so often perfect games feel like they have this like historic thing happen right before the perfect game gets clinched. Yes. And that play by Abreu was so amazing. You thought it was going to happen. And then for this to break it up was kind of an anticlimactic moment. But
I do think the step foot, the foot that you're planting in your step to swing and prepare to swing, is harder to move out of the way than the back foot.
Yeah.
The front foot is harder to move away than the back foot. So maybe I dropped that to 4 at most.
So most of the responses coming in were no's, no's, no's. And then we got a couple of good responses that were the opposite. So Jack said, Roberto Perez should eat a fastball to the face today for doing that last night. That hasn't happened yet. The game's still ongoing.
You want to get hit? Happened. All right, we'll hit you.
I think they moved on to the Adam Eaton incident now. Just 2 more quick ones. Sean says, Perez didn't even attempt to move. Most guys who get pitched down and in, move their feet. Kind of what we were alluding to there.
Yeah.
And Adam
says,
sorry,
I jumped the gun on that one.
Absolutely not. It's like saying a goalie has a shutout going, so you won't shoot, so you can have it. Give him a participation medal, too, while you're at it. Hashtag soft.
By the way, the integrity responses to this one can eat it. Like, I remember Derek Jeter's final home game at Yankee Stadium and someone serving him a little meatball so that he could hit the walk-off home run. Like, there is precedent in baseball for people understanding the moment. I mean, hell, the umpires in that game last night, did they not understand the moment? Yeah. Did you see the strikeout call on out number two in the ninth inning?
Yep.
Guys, do we have the strikeout call on out number two in the ninth inning? Now, you tell me, Jesse, for the radio audience, how far inside is out number two called strike looking for Rodon?
Multiple inches. Multiple inches inside.
Six?
Yeah, at least. At least.
The reaction
that's being generous
is amazing. So listen, there is listen, I'm standing there. I understand standing there. I get standing there. I am going to be that guy that says I will stand there. But don't give me this entire, what do you want, a participation medal? Derek Jeter, one of the greatest players of all time, first ballot Hall of Famer. He got served the meatball in his final at-bat at Yankee Stadium. Is it different than a perfect game? I don't know. By the way, just I know that we're going to get an update on the Canucks, or at least what we think might be an update on the Canucks. Mm-hmm. No hitter or cycle?
What's
more exciting? What would you like to see more? They're around the same.
I think
no hitter a little more.
I think a no hitter is more exciting. I think the team goes crazy, and you have the ability, like right in that moment, to all rush to the mound together.
Right.
Whereas a cycle, like you don't know when it's coming. The guy's on base. The team can't react in the same way. So for me, it's a no hitter.
But usually the no hitter is kind of boring until the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Or until the I would say
because you can't talk to the pitcher. You can't go near him.
Seven, eight. You start building that excitement.
Yeah. Everyone's afraid
of
saying
anything.
For the
first, it's just like no one's hitting a ball here. Like what the hell's going on?
Yeah. Do you want to get to this news?
Yeah. Is it news? Is it report? We're hearing from the global ambassador, I've been told.
The global ambassador, John Shannon, has reported that Saturday's Maple Leafs and Canucks game has been postponed as well. So that's two straight postponements now for the Canucks. Originally, they were obviously supposed to get their schedule going, but doesn't look like that's going to be the case.
And John has ins at the NHL front offices, so I would assume that that would probably be true. If so, that means the first two of the scheduled games for the Canucks have been postponed. I'm hearing that we're also hearing, listen, this is how this show works. We're live right now. I know a lot of people don't understand that, but we are actually live every time we go up, or at least 99% of the time that we go up. And is there word from the NHL front office as well that was handed down, Jesse?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, so I'm reading it right now. The NHL said, I'm going to paraphrase it here, the decision to extend the period prior to the team's resumption of play was made to provide club staff and players with additional time for recovery and preparation following its recent COVID outbreak. The NHL made the decision with input from the leagues, NHLPAs, and clubs' medical groups. So that's the most important takeaway from that, I believe. And it's expected that a revised schedule will be released tomorrow. So
a revised schedule tomorrow, and from the NHL, we're getting just one game postponed. Former global ambassador,
yes,
because he's now working on another show, and I don't know if it's okay to call him the global ambassador anymore. I should probably ask him that. But John Shannon reporting that Saturday's game is postponed as well, but that's not official.
Return to gameplay is being delayed from Friday, April 16th.
Okay.
There you have it from the league.
All right, we'll take the break, and we're going to test the versatility of this show today, kids. We're going to go from WWE to Jackie Robinson to the Masters' attempt at inclusivity. Hope you can appreciate the range, and if you can, tell a friend. Still to count Matt Devlin on the Raptors, Dan Shulman on the Jays ahead of their season opener against the Royals, Dan Murphy, Chris Johnson with the latest on the Canucks, but after the break, fresh off his WWE Raw debut, longtime friend Adman Virk joins me for the rest of the hour. Tim and Friends continues.
Here's Luka. Gets it away. It's gone! A Doncic dagger! As he was stumbling, he somehow got it to go.
It's Lebo in front. Backhand scores! Josh Lebo. Fire still burning for the Calgary Flames in a big 4-1 win.
Here's Pascal. Oh, gee, oh my, on the weak side with the putback.
Making his debut, joining our broadcast team from the MLB Network, Adnan Virk. Adnan, welcome.
Turner hits a fly ball, left center field, way back, and gone!
Flash?
Oh, yeah. Money shot.
Hey. making his debut, joining our broadcast team from the MLB Network, Adnan Virk. Adnan, welcome.
Byron, my pleasure. Corey, thank you in advance to both you guys for carrying me tonight. This has been a seesaw battle, but Asuka looks to have asserted herself and trying to put the punishment. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It's Charlotte Flair. Oh, my goodness. Charlotte Flair now just attacking Asuka as she appeared to have Rhea Ripley in trouble. Boom. And now the kick to the face of Rhea Ripley.
Clear the tracks. There's a train coming through.
Oh my goodness. Drew McIntyre with a huge shot. Oh. Oh, my goodness.
Randy Orton using his preferred tool of destruction.
Randy Orton just keeps giving it to Drew McIntyre.
This is all perfectly legal. No triple threat or count out in a... no count out or disqualification in a triple threat matchup.
Oh my goodness. Randy Orton just tossing aside Drew McIntyre.
You have to isolate.
Oh my goodness. Braun Strowman comes with that running shoulder tackle.
Uh-oh.
Oh my goodness.
A little redecorating here.
Now watch out for it.
Oh my goodness.
Dear God, what happened on Monday? Our first co-host of the day is challenging Nate Burleson for the most jobs of any one of our regulars. He's got more jobs than the Heyman family on In Living Color. MLB Network, NHL Network, Cinephile, the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. And as you can see, the latest, the play-by-play voice of Raw. Monday nights on Sportsnet 360, ladies and gentlemen. Adnan Virk, welcome back, buddy.
What's up, Timmy? It's great to be back with you, man. I love this little montage you welcome me with because it has been surreal for everyone, I'm sure, and equally for me. When I actually see that, I go, that isn't actually me. This didn't actually happen that I'm calling Monday Night Raw. But it proves all those years when we were together at the Score, when we had Raw and we had SmackDown and the bottom line and we interviewed Tori Wilson. Clearly, all this information led to this. We should have guessed this years ago.
Just got stuck in there. You've already got three jobs. How the hell, like, I have no idea this is, and let me just say this for the audience. Like, and I don't, this is no BS. I don't blow smoke for the sake of blowing smoke. Like, I don't know a broadcaster that could do what the hell you're doing right now as well as you're doing it. To add another one to the equation is just, to me, mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's so kind of you, Tim. I know it's 100% sincere from you. And I'm sure there's lots of others who are just as versatile, and you are one of them as well. But to your point, I think I'm incredibly fortunate that I have great teammates. And we'll start with WWE. Those guys were amazing, Corey Graves and Byron Saxton. And you'll appreciate this because you're a real student of broadcasting. You know, I thought going in, I'm not going to call these moves. The worst thing I can do is imagine calling your first Tiger Cats game and you called a slant. And I'm like, oh, my God, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Are you kidding? So I was very straightforward about, as you heard there, emotion, energy, excitement, couple one-liners, and then let them carry the movement. So I was fortunate. Those guys, and unlike football, whereas, you know, you have to call the play and Mike Morreale would do the analysis, in WWE, it's okay for them to say, oh, they're doing the armbar, they're doing this lock, and you can kind of lay out, use a TV term, meaning not speak. So I was lucky to have those guys. MLB Network, we have great researchers, as you know, same with at Sportsnet. So it really is a team effort. But to your point, I wasn't seeking this. There was a part of me that said, hey, there's only so much I can do here. I'm a house cat. I'm not big on the travel. I don't know how I'm going to do 52 weeks a year. To be clear, they don't take any vacation. One of the first things I asked, I go, vacation? What? No, that's 52 weeks. You're doing Raw. So we're early on, so I feel good. But your point is well taken. I may have a different stab at this in March when I'm calling you going, Mikhail, if you're right, this was a mess.
It's unbelievable, man. Kudos to you. One of the hardcore wrestling fans around here noticed that Byron Saxton kind of gave you a heads up that they were coming towards the announcer's booth, the commentator's table, but you hung in there for a little while and got up close and personal.
Yeah,
is that true?
I don't know how much I can say. Yeah, I don't know how much I can say or can't say, but I'll be honest about this. I did not know that was coming. I have an inkling, but I did not know they were coming. So you're right. Byron and Corey were like, hey,
get the hell out of here.
I just figured, right. And you can watch the tape. I clearly didn't know any better. Maybe I was just naive or thought, well, that's not going to be an issue. But no, that happens.
Right.
So they learned. When I looked and I saw Drew McIntyre hit the table, my first thought was, this precious iPhone is gone. And you remember how many times I was on my phone texting back when we were working together. Yeah. It's gotten worse over the years. And by the way, thanks to you, the amount of people – who reached out was really overwhelming. It was an avalanche, and probably my fault why I should have been better. But from like 9 a.m. until 5 p.m., I was just thanking people. Thankfully, that's not going to happen this week. No one's thanking me. It's over now. Just focus on the job. But I thought the phone was down, but I wanted to hang in there. However, the next time they came around, I was smarter. Grab my cord, grab my phone. I ain't getting fooled again.
All right. Understood. All right, let's talk some baseball. You're sitting at the MLB Network studios, and you are, as I mentioned, among, if not the most versatile broadcaster out there. I think Bob Costas even told you the same live on the air once, so this isn't smoke. The Carlos Rodon, we had the conversation a little earlier about the no-hitter versus the cycle, but it seems as though the no-hitter, given how many times we see it, and the separation between that and a perfect game, it's such a fine line. I mean, it was a toe away, maybe even a toenail away from happening. But how much more stock do you put in the perfect game than the no-hitter?
It's significant, Timmy. And to your point, the cycle I've grown to disparage over time. I mean, as a kid, I thought it was amazing. Yeah. Wow, this guy did one of everything. And now I talk to John Shambi and Matt Vasgersian, and they go, like, what's the big deal? Like, you'd rather have a guy hit three home runs than just have this unique aspect of having a single, double, triple, and home run. So to your point about no-hitters and perfect games, like, perfect games are under 30. No-hitters are almost 300. Like, that's quite a separation when you're looking at a 10-to-1 ratio. And for Rodon yesterday, the way he was grooving, you go, he's going to get this. And as you said, when it falls apart, that's what's the most excruciating, because it's one thing if you get squeezed on a strike and all of a sudden there's a walk. It's one thing if there's a blooper. But a hit by pitch, you go, hey, come on, dude. You couldn't get out of the way? Like, that to where we're deprived of greatness like that? And to me, what's most heartbreaking, we know this growing up in Toronto, seeing Dave Steve. Like, every time I think of his book, Tomorrow I'll Be Perfect, the great autobiographical title, I think it was three no-hitters that ended up going on, and twice, I want to say four one-hitters, and two of them, like, in the last at-bat, two outs away. So anytime it gets that close, it certainly gets excruciating. I'm just glad he's still got the no-hitter. To me, the worst-case scenario is lose perfecto, lose no-hitter, lose the shutout, and you go, oh, my God, just get him out of the game. So at least he was able to still hang on and get the no-hitter, but it was awesome to see.
Still one of my favorite calls of all time, El Presidente, El Perfecto.
Oh. Dave Van Horn of the Expo. So good.
Listen, it's play-by-play day. It's not only Adnan Virk play-by-play WWE Raw. It's not Raw's War anymore, because that was one of my favorite taglines of all time, just to say Raw is War. It's not that anymore, is it?
It's not anymore, okay. But I did think, like, in my head, I'm like, who can I reach out to? And I may still reach out to him. Like, McAuliffe would be good at this, because you have to have energy, passion, baritone, and there's just that slight bit of embellishment, right? There's about maybe more than 10%. I was about to say 10, it's more like 60%, depending on where you're going. But you can't be screaming the whole time. So, like, it is interesting that you're modulating, you're exciting. It's staccato bursts. Five words here. What a shot here. What a mover here. And then it's RKO. And you can really get excited. But dude, I honestly think, but my dream is, like, at the end, if I can just say, hey, can I just bring my friends in? They can just call a couple of matches. Like, I think it'd be hilarious if we could do that.
Do you want to see Roberto Perez move his foot? Are you okay with it?
Absolutely. Listen, I'm okay with it. Like, people are saying Bush League. I don't know. Bush League is laying down a bunt. Then I'm like, come on, man. Like, just swing away.
Right.
To me, I'm like, it was an errant pitch. He didn't move his foot. That's totally acceptable. It wasn't Conforto recently for the Mets leading into it, which the Mets broadcast guys were killing him. I mean, that's the home team. And Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez were apoplectic. So I don't have an issue with that. I think Roberto Hernandez, hey, man, he hit me. What do you want me to do?
All right, will you stick around? Donovan Bennett is going to pop by, and he's prepared a piece for us. So I want to do that with him. He's written a feature for Jackie Robinson Day. I know you're wearing the pin right now, the 42, on your chest. So we will walk down that road with him next, if you'll stick around with us.
Yeah, can I tell one play-by-play story about you? Or you want to wait till the next segment?
Do it now. Quick, though.
Okay, I'll do it now. So I remember when I was talking about your prep all the time, remember one time you were looking at OUA basketball, and the name was Steve Martin, and you'd written down, hey, Brooke, you're going to like this. You go, not the wild and crazy guy his name would suggest.
I have to write those down.
That's what I'm looking for.
My brain has taken too many knocks, so I'll write it down. Listen, you better come up with a better Steve Martin name than that one, okay? Or line than that one.
Right. I would have just said the jerk, right? Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. You're like, not the wild and crazy guy. I'm like, I don't believe McAuliffe.
And then a big wink towards you, eh? All right. Donovan Bennett coming around. It's an old reunion. Adnan Virk sticking around here on Tim and Friends. Listen, we're not playing around with the title Tim and Friends. Not only Adnan Virk joining me live from New Jersey, but in studio, Donovan Bennett has now joined the fray. Adnan, is it true that we've all known each other almost 15 years? Like, where are we at here?
I was about to say, it makes us feel awfully old, but my favorite Donovan Bennett story is, and I'm going to keep calling him DJ. I know he's had a name change, but I'm going with DJ. Is back when he was when he was playing football, and yeah. I covered him, and you covered him, Tim. You're calling plays. I'm interviewing on the sidelines, and afterwards, this very charismatic, young, ambitious guy says, "I want to get into TV. I'm going to intern with the Score. I'll learn around you guys," and eventually becomes a part of our crew for University Rush. And one time is on the conference call. We have conference calls with the coaches to ask about the rosters and any information we can glean. And at one point, DJ is asking his former coach, Greg Marshall, about the status of some players. And Greg Marshall, in like a conspiratorial tone, says, "Is this DJ?" He's just like, "Yeah." Almost as if I don't necessarily trust McAuliffe and Burke, but DJ, between us, I can tell you, but don't use this. This is just off the record. I'm like, okay. So DJ was already in the good hands because all the coaches respected him.
I appreciate that. It's all about the plug. It's all about who you know. I do remember on the sidelines coming up to you, you know, it's like a TV timeout, and I said, "Hey, Virk, one day you're going to make something out of yourself. One day you're not going to be in Waterloo on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And you'll be in Florida calling WWE matches."
And now he's the Amon family. Like, he's got five jobs, MLB, NHL. Listen, I'm going to cut you off, Virk, because Donovan came bearing gifts. He actually brought a piece that he has produced, put together, had help putting it together, but wrote. Donovan, tell us what it is about.
Yeah, the difference is Adnan's famous. He just comes on the show. I have to work to get on the show. So, in saying that, it is Jackie Robinson Day, and we celebrate the legacy. And baseball has come a long way when it comes to race relative to sports like golf, which is not a high bar to clear. But why have they come this far? Let's use this day, this commemorative day, take a look at baseball on race in 2021. On the day MLB celebrates Jackie Robinson's legacy, it's worthwhile to look at how far the sport has come and why they've gained significant ground of late. The most recent example being MLB's response to the SB 202 bill in Georgia. The Election Integrity Act makes a number of controversial changes to how state elections are run. Basically, it makes it more difficult for black people to vote. The PGA Tour didn't move the Masters out of Georgia, a tournament whose name alone is a sign that maybe racial sensitivity isn't on their radar. Which is why it was a big deal MLB moved this summer's All-Star Game, Home Run Derby, and Draft out of Atlanta in response. It's not like the owners became woke and decided they wanted to make a political statement. They realized they were going to make one either way. If you're about to reply with stick to sports, stop and reconsider. When Jackie Robinson had to stay in segregated housing because his pigment was different from his teammates, there was no outcry to stick to sports then. Teams and leagues put pressure on states to fund the building of stadiums or make allowances to return to play in the midst of the COVID pandemic. So putting pressure on in relation to voting rights isn't an overreach. Politics is embedded in pro sport. One wouldn't happen without the other. In the end, MLB did what was best for MLB. The great outcome is that for once, what was the right thing for the league finally aligned with what was right for many of its black players and consumers. Rob Manfred's legacy is full of labor issues and cheating scandals and juice ball controversies and the reorganization of minor league baseball. His reputation can't withstand another hit. This was not a player-driven boycott like it was in the NBA bubble. This was proactive to preempt a potential player-led mutiny. Baseball isn't a primarily black-led sport, but they made a calculation that their relationship with the players in the long term is more important than the relationship with Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, in the short term. MLB made a big deal that they were supporting black lives at the outset of the 2020 season. They took the statistics from the Negro League and put them in the record book. They plastered Black Lives Matter all over the diamond. They've gone great lengths to show where they are on this issue. Sitting on the sidelines in this case would undermine all that work and equity gained. Colin Kaepernick learned you might have the right to do what you want, but there are financial ramifications if people don't agree. In a way, MLB's decision is exemplifying the shoe is on the other foot. That equation isn't the same in the sport of golf. Augusta had exclusively black caddies for decades, didn't have a black member until 1990, women couldn't be members until 2012. All the while, it's been the preeminent major on the PGA Tour. Lee Elder was honored for breaking the color barrier, but there was only one black player in the field in 2021. Golf hasn't become inclusive because not being inclusive has never threatened its bottom line. Rather, the brand they are selling is exclusivity, not inclusivity. The Masters are a private monopoly. Augusta National Golf Club, which is built on the site of a plantation, essentially is the Masters. You can put an all-star game anywhere. Augusta National is the only place you can have the Masters. And the Masters self-controls everything. They produce their own tournament, even down to the graphics on the TV broadcast. On the flip side, most stadiums across MLB are publicly funded. A profit motive drives both of them. The Masters was able to continue to make money by continuing to play, and the MLB was able to mitigate the loss of money by moving where they play. These are capitalist businesses, so the moral compass bends in the direction the money flows. They are the same, but market pressures make them different. The Masters is living in the past. MLB is confronting and trying to change its past. It's a low bar, but baseball has really come a long way from Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier after all.
Well done, Jackie Robinson Day. And at the risk of sounding like the white guy that says I was going to do something on this, I am going to do it. But on Friday, I was doing research on the first black member at Augusta in 1990. Ron Townsend was his name?
I believe so, yeah.
And the first female member. And it's because I felt awkward about Lee Elder going out on that tee on Thursday. And I couldn't articulate it properly. And I just felt like I might not be able to do this justice in a day. And I'm glad that you picked up my fumble and ran with it a little bit here, Donovan. But as Adnan, as Donovan knows, I have misquoted Plato a couple of times in his presence, and Jesse knows it too. Never discourage anyone who continually makes progress, no matter how slow. But I don't know if this is continual progress or this is prevailing winds that is guiding what the Masters is doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the culture is progress, right, Adnan? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think culturally it's just always been a challenge in golf. I mean, say what you will about baseball, and we're well aware that African-American representation is not what it once was in the sport. It's now at 7.6%. Latino players are at 28%, and then obviously it's predominantly white. But I think in golf, like, it's just never been a sport at the forefront of civil rights. Like, Jackie Robinson literally changed American civilization. Like, him breaking the color barrier changed baseball, but changed life. Whereas in golf, it's never been at the forefront. Like, Tiger helped change notions of golf and saying that, listen, minorities can be at the table and can dominate, etc. But I just think those old traditions are so ingrained in the sport. As you guys know, I covered the Masters, which was stunning because I don't know a birdie from an eagle, back in 2008. And when I was at the Masters, which Trevor Immelman won, Tiger finished second, I appreciated the azaleas and the fact you get a cheese sandwich for $1.50 and chicken sandwiches for $2. But there was this sense. I remember walking around, and DJ knows this. There's places you are sometimes going, I don't really fit in here. And they're not used to people like me wandering around. And until they get more representation on all levels, particularly, I think, at the higher levels, there's going to be kind of that ingrained issues there.
I know you're going to jump in there, so I want to give you the opportunity to say that you were going to say before, but Adnan's on a one-second delay, and that's the way we're working right now because of this protocol and all this stuff. So just bear with us here, but go ahead if you wanted to add.
No, I just want to hear more from Adnan. I spoke for like 3 minutes in that piece. I have nothing else to say. Verk, I do, and I'm somewhat cynical. And yeah, MLB is doing it because of profit, but like they're doing it. They've made new hires in terms of growing their game internationally. Even the let the kids play mantra shows that they understand how people view them. But you cover the sport. What have you seen in your time that lets you feel like it's moving in a positive direction?
I think the big things that you mentioned, DJ, I think in the past, if they had said, hey, listen, you know what? If black people don't want to play baseball, what's the big deal? But they're doing all these initiatives, like you said, the RBI program, going towards inner cities, trying to grow the game, doing so nationally and internationally. You know, in Hispanic households, in the Dominican Republic, obviously, the sport is enormous, and they are capitalizing on that in America. But they have to try to find a way to get back black fans, black players, et cetera. But I think they're really aware of it. That's the first thing. Hey, be aware that you have an issue right now, okay? Right. Then secondly, target it. Three, actually do something. And I'm with you on the cynicism. That's okay to say. I mean, I know one time a former boss I had one time said, listen, it's important to say I believe in inclusivity, but it's also a good business. Like, it's not just, hey, it looks nice to have a rainbow. It right. actually is important. It makes your company better. You make more money when you have different people from different places. So I think it's okay to look at that. And obviously what happened in Atlanta, pulling the All-Star game, I mean, that was a pretty decisive move for Major League Baseball. I don't know if they've done that in the past, but to say, you know what, voter suppression bill, we're not in favor of it. We don't think our players are in favor of it. We're going to make a very swift decision, which will incur backlash, but we're willing to do so. That, to me, said something.
I feel like when it's disingenuous or fake, people from all angles get upset with it. And if the Masters feels like this is the start of something, then it's amazing. Good for them. They've taken that extra step. And listen, the first black member became so because of a controversy at a course that just held the PGA Championship, Shoal Creek in Alabama, and that's why they went out and got a black member. But if it is a step forward, then that's wonderful, and nobody's going to get in the way. It's when it feels fake or disingenuous. I think people from all angles just turn to it and go, this is horse bleep, and we don't believe any of it. The part for me that makes it really interesting is the Masters has been sold on exclusivity for years, and yet who was the one person in the last 50 years to do more for golf than any other person? Tiger Woods, right? And if you're not encouraging the next Tiger Woods, how are you replacing that money that he brought into the sport? And I don't know much about the Masters or Augusta, but I think they like money.
But what's the legacy of Tiger Woods in that yeah. sense, right? Like, there's a documentary, The Vince Carter Effect, right? Like, in 15 years, there's going to be a documentary, the News Pit 2 Effect, where people want it to be Tim McAuliffe and Anna Burke. What is the legacy of Tiger in golf? Because the amount of minority players, specifically from North America, has not really gone up.
Yeah, and you would have thought when we first saw Tiger Woods jump on the scene that there would have been more of an effect, but that hasn't occurred that much thus far, has it, Adnan?
No, it hasn't. I'm just impressed that DJ, clearly with the line of the day, with the News Pit 2 effect. But it makes me think of how an athlete can transcend the sport. Like, we all know Gretzky, when he did in Los Angeles. Like, I have friends who are in L.A. Like, dude, he made hockey cool. Brothers are like, man, I'm following the L.A. Kings. This is awesome. The Rocky and Kings jerseys. And with Tiger, he made a very old, staid, white establishment sport cool. But to your point, where is the avalanche of other Tiger Woods? And that's always the issue to me. It's one thing to be a pioneer, but if there's not other replicators coming along, then really how kind of impact are you making beyond being a single, isolated, incredible success story?
News Pit 2 was an old area of the Score television network that was home to Adnan Verk, Cabrel Richards, Sid Sixero, Todd Macklin.
Glenn Sheeler.
Sonny Thakalkaran.
Yes, Chad Walker.
Yeah, it was
at Turk Broda. If you're following on Twitter,
it was just
Turk Broda. Yes,
a group of people that worked very hard and were just kind of jokers on the side too.
Can't wait to watch the documentary.
is there anything more? Listen, we only got about $1.15 left, and I don't want to get into Jackie Robinson Day or days, as it were, in Major League Baseball and cut it short. But it just feels like a special day when you look out and you see all the 42s.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best. I was glad in the abbreviated season that they continued to do it last year because it's so good to see.
Adnan, listen, buddy, this was awesome. Thank you very much for doing this, as always. And I know you've got four jobs, but any time that you can carve out 45 minutes to an hour for us, please do.
Dude, it's my pleasure, Tim. Seriously, the amount of reaction I got from last time, they said, you look like you're having so much fun. I said, yeah. I'm getting paid to hang out with McAuliffe and crack jokes. Who's saying no to that? And now I get to do it with DJ as well. So trust me, my phone is always available. Great to catch
up
with you both. And
stop
Tim, I wanted to ask. Tim, how is Sid doing? Because the text messages I've received, yeah. I don't know if he's reacting well to these early morning hours.
I know they have a lot of meetings, and that doesn't go well with Sid, or at least it didn't go well with Sid when he worked on this show, if you remember that.
I've seen him do some great Pilates in the morning. So
oh, yeah,
I think
he does. He exercises, too, on this show. So he might last another month. Thank you, Donovan, for coming by and doing the work.
My pleasure.
There is Donovan Bennett, Adnan Virk, old school around here. Coming up, Dan Shulman, Matt Devlin on their way in hour number two, plus the latest on the Canucks awesome. Coming up next. Tomorrow's game against the Oilers has been postponed. Saturday, we will see. We'll get the latest reaction from Vancouver and Dan Murphy, Chris Johnson next on Tim and Friends. Thanks, fellas.
Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
All right, thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Hour number two at Tim and Friends on the air. Two of the best play-by-play voices in the business. Matty D, Matt Devlin, and Dan Shulman coming up. But we're going to start the hour with hockey. And the latest on the Vancouver Canucks situation. At this moment, we know that the Canucks and Oilers game scheduled for tomorrow has been postponed. Their Saturday game against the Leafs on Hockey Night in Canada is reportedly also going to be postponed. However, the league says they will release a revised schedule tomorrow. Now, we just received in the last few moments a statement from Jim Benning and the Vancouver Canucks on their Twitter account that goes as follows, and I quote, "Our medical and hockey operations staff have collaborated with the NHL, NHLPA, and local health officials on the health and well-being of our team and our players' readiness to play. I would like to thank our players, our upcoming opponents, and everyone involved at the NHL and the NHLPA for their input, guidance, and understanding through this process. Above all else, the health and safety of players, staff, and family remains the priority. Before every player resumes training, a full medical evaluation is carried out consistent with return to play NHL COVID protocols. As of today, certain players have passed evaluation. However, many have not yet cleared and extra recovery time is required. Our medical staff are confident the recovery process for those players will be aided by an additional couple of days," end quote. Chris Johnston is standing by at Scotiabank Arena, but first we head west to Dan Murphy at Rogers Arena. Dan, aside from what I just read from Jim Benning, what's the latest you're hearing and how in doubt is Saturday?
Well, I think Saturday is very much in doubt, and I think because there is a bit of a simple solution. They're supposed to play the Leafs again on Monday, so you could go Sunday, Monday instead of Saturday, Monday, and you're not rescheduling games where the Leafs have to fly out west to Vancouver. So I think that's likely going to happen. I know that one member of the Leafs was told to prepare for Sunday versus Vancouver, but none of that is official. I could see it happening. Now, as for what Jim Benning said, I can tell you there were most of the Canucks skated today, not all. Three players still remain on the COVID list, but there are some players not on the COVID list that are still not fit to play, not feeling good enough to skate, so they're not out of the woods health-wise, so that has to be concerning. As for some that did skate, I talked to one player who said before the Edmonton game was postponed that a game on Friday night was, and I quote, out of the question for a number of Canucks players. They just weren't ready physically yet to step back in. You heard what JT Miller said yesterday. He said he didn't have COVID and he didn't feel it was safe for him to play. So imagine these guys who have had COVID, who haven't played a game in over 3 weeks and haven't skated really much at all, trying to prepare against, Connor McDavid and then Auston Matthews. So it's still very much a fluid situation, but kudos to JT Miller for bringing these issues to the forefront, because without him, I don't think the action for at least Friday's game being postponed would have happened.
I love you powering through the train because you're a pro, and I'll just ask you on the follow-up here, because We've seen precedent set by the New Jersey Devils, but what the difference is between what the New Jersey Devils went through and their 21 on COVID protocol and what the Vancouver Canucks went through and their 21 players on COVID protocol is the variant. Is it not that they were hit harder by this and what it actually felt like?
True, and this went through the Canucks players a little bit quicker, and I believe also that New Jersey, they had their outbreak prior to their bye week, where the Canucks got theirs after their bye week, so they have less time to kind of get back into game shape, so to speak, so it's going to be more difficult for them to get those skates in. The same person I talked to, player I talked to, said that a game Saturday was, you know, it could be possible, but two extra days to skate and have practices and kind of get to feel your way back onto the ice would be huge. So that's another reason why I think Saturday's game will ultimately be postponed to a later date, because the players are saying that, you know, one day is big, 2 days is even bigger. But this might all be, you know, just delaying the inevitable. These games postponed, they were going to play 19 and 31 days.
Yeah.
They might have to play 19 and 28 days. We don't know what the end of the season is going to look like, but the safety of the players for the first couple of games, like trying to play back-to-back in less than 24 hours, was going to be almost impossible. And I think that's ultimately why these games, or this one game for sure, was postponed.
With early start times as well on this. One last one for you, Dan, because the train keeps interrupting us. Let me just, did JT Miller empower some players with what he said and make them feel a little bit more comfortable coming forward and talking with the PA and what ended up being a meeting last night?
I think so. You know, I think that he kind of gave them a voice. And here's a guy that didn't have COVID saying, it's not safe. You know, we're not even thinking about the playoffs right now. We just want our families to be okay. He's talking about one teammate that's have trouble going up and down the stairs. So I think that he did give them voice. It reminds me a little bit of, I'm not sure how long ago, it was like 1999. I went to see the inaugural kart race in Dallas-Fort Worth, and the race was ultimately canceled because they had the players meeting, and one guy near the exit of the meeting put his hand up and said, listen, I'm getting vertigo in these corners. Is anybody else getting that? And like three quarters of the player, the drivers put their arms up and said, right, we are too. The race was canceled. So maybe him saying this allowed other people and other players around him to speak and say, listen, I don't feel right about this either. Can we have another day or 2 days?
We put you in tough circumstances, Dan Murphy, and as always, you delivered. Appreciate it, buddy.
No problem. And someday down the road, Tim, I'll tell you about my one half of play-by-play in NBA basketball. It's a doozy.
One half of play. It is play-by-play day here on Tim and Friends. I'm going to hold you to that. Appreciate it, Dan. Be well.
All right, Tim. Stay safe.
There is Dan Murphy in Vancouver. All right, Leafs and Jets face off Scotiabank Arena tonight. That's where we find our own Chris Johnston. And Chris, we just talked to Dan Murphy in Vancouver about this Canucks situation. Where are you on all this, and what have you heard from the league on the reaction to one JT Miller and then the meeting with the PA?
Well, I'm clear, just like Murph said there, that what JT Miller said and the fact he was so open. You know, first of all, I don't think he was speaking just for himself. I think those comments reflected what a number of his teammates thought, and I think it did propel a little bit of action here. There was more discussion with the NHL Players Association last night that led to what happened today. And you know, my understanding of what happened is the guys that were on the ice at practice today were tested, and you know, not all of them passed those tests. So you know, the Canucks probably aren't in a position even to ice a full roster if they were considering playing tomorrow. And so I think the league was receptive to those comments. I don't think they were taken the wrong way or anything like that. And, you know, really, this game was scheduled about a week ago, rescheduled. And at that time, maybe the thought was more players would be recovered than they have been. You know, the Canucks practice facility had to remain closed an extra day this week. And so this has been a pretty fluid situation all along.
I know the NHL built a week into the end of the season for this very purpose. I know we're projecting down the road a little bit, but do you feel like they might have to push that back even further? From what I hear, the NHL does not want to do that.
No, they really don't. I mean, look, they want the Stanley Cup handed out by mid-July at the absolute latest. And so when we're talking about how long the regular season goes, obviously that's impacting and crunching the window with which to get the playoffs played. And so, you know, I think they'll do everything in their power not to have the season extended anymore. You know, maybe they go a day or two from where they are at now, because I do think there is just a tiny bit of buffer if they have to use it. Again, understanding that they don't want to do that. But certainly at some point we'll probably be talking about, do they reduce the number of games total the Canucks play versus pushing the season back much more? I just don't think that there's much room with which to do that.
Is there a chance, listen, CJ, early in the year we had a team meeting around here and we decided that we were going to put point percentage on the boards whenever we showed the standings, because there was a chance that all teams might not finish this season. Has the NHL talked about that and perhaps teams not finishing their entire schedule?
It's definitely been a discussion point, just understanding that, look, I mean, none of us want this to happen. I don't even want to speak it into existence, but, you know, we could still have an outbreak between now and the end of the season with another team, not the Canucks, and you might be in that position where you're forced to do that. So I think that the league has understood all along that that was a possibility, and it remains a possibility today. You know, it's clear that they're trying to do everything they can to get every team to 56 games. You know, there's sponsor commitments, there's TV commitments, there's a lot of financial reasons for trying to do that, and ultimately that's what this season is about, right? Is you know, keeping the sport going, trying to keep the business going on some level. But, you know, it is possible we get to some other situation, or maybe even this Canucks situation will push them to where they have to scale back from that goal. And you know, that's been recognized and understood that it was a possibility for sure.
Chris Johnson joining us from just in front of Legends Row at Scotiabank Arena as the Leafs are about to face the Jets. And CJ, I was on a show in Vancouver earlier this week, and I was talking about how Toronto has handled the other two favorites in this division pretty well, in the Edmonton Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets. Does it feel like the Jets and or the Oilers don't have another chance to make a statement because they don't face the Leafs by the end of the season? But does it feel like the Jets want to make a statement against this Leafs team?
Well, absolutely. Look, they started their backup goaltender last night in Ottawa, and Laurent Boisois, who's a very good backup goaltender, but, you know, the message there is they're saving Connor Hellebuyck for the game against Toronto. You know, I do think, of course, every team wants to finish as high as possible. We can have a debate about, you know, whether home ice advantage means anything under the circumstances these playoffs will be played, but I think that it is a nice feather in your cap to win a division, and the Jets still have that ability. They're not far behind the Leafs, relatively speaking, and they do have a number of these head-to-head meetings still remaining. And so, you know, I think that you want to play well in these games to try to finish as high in the standings. You want to maybe send a message in case of a playoff series that could be starting in 5 or 6 weeks, depending on how things play out here between these teams. And so I do think that there's a little added element to these games. And you can see it even, as I mentioned, just in the way they're structuring their lineup and getting ready for it.
All right, CJ, last one. And yesterday I was accused of being the Rogers employee of the month by suggesting that if the Calgary Flames happen to sweep this series in Montreal, that people might start getting nervous. Are they a little closer to nervous the way that went down last night for Calgary?
Oh, I think so. I mean, because it wasn't just that Calgary won that game, Tim.
They dominated.
You know, they looked really good. Yeah. I mean, they were. Obviously, it was desperation city for them. I mean, they understood what you were saying. In their own dressing room, they were thinking the same thing. But, you know, I thought they handled themselves well in Toronto. They won a game against Edmonton prior to that. You know, the Flames are certainly heating up at this time. And you know, they're still facing a huge hill here. But I think that they have that belief that's growing. And if they can get another win against the Canadians, you know, it just is like a rock picking up some steam. And so, you know, I would still, if I had to bet on it, say the Canadians are going to get that playoff spot. But they're feeling a little less comfortable after the first 3 or 4 days of this week than they were at the start of the week. And that's all Calgary's trying to do, is to build a little bit of doubt into their minds.
I always feel comfortable with you, CJ. Appreciate this, as always.
Love you, bud. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, too. There is Chris Johnson. I should say I love you back, because otherwise I sound like a douchebag. All right, as I mentioned earlier, this is the day of play-by-play voices. Adnan Virk of Monday Night Raw, Dan Shulman of the Jays, ESPN College Basketball, and I just heard today, the Olympics is going to be our next guest. But coming up right now, everything from minor league baseball and that grind to TNT basketball to Big Ten football, and of course, you know him as the voice of the Toronto Raptors on Play-by-Play. He's so big, No one network can contain him. I'm starting to feel inadequate. Ladies and gentlemen, Matty Devlin. Matty D!
Well, I appreciate that. I'm definitely not Adnan or Dan Shulman who... You know, they got that cornered for sure.
What did I miss?
Multiple checks coming in.
What did I miss on the resume? Because,
by the way, can I just, sorry to interject.
Yeah.
How do you follow after Chris says, I love you? Okay.
Well, I think
you don't say, I love you. But then you say, I should say, I love you. Geez. And then you go with the other word that you said. I mean, love and the other words you said. I'm kind of like,
the DB word? I did research. John Shannon will attest to this. I did research suggesting that that was now okay to say on network television in the United States of America. I actually, really? I forwarded the New York Times story to John Shannon, who called me on using that word on television. And I had done the research on it and felt comfortable that that was no longer a taboo word. So
it's always easy just to say love.
All right. Love. Exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you. Before we get to Danny Shulman, who's coming up, how did the Raptors win that game last night?
Well, they had a tremendous amount of length. And, you know, that was something that we haven't seen a ton of. I think the adjustments going into that game with respect to Gillespie coming off of the bench with Ken Burch, who I'm a huge fan and have been for a long time, at his size, the ability to get rebounds. Look, they had a season high in rebounds, right? So it speaks to that. They were able to make shots when it counted. And then also, and I was really surprised by this, Tim, there was no sense of urgency, I felt, from San Antonio. And I was really surprised by that. However, it's the youngest team that Greg Popovich has ever coached. They have 9 players that are under the age of 25. And so maybe they just don't have that sense of, hey, you're right now in the middle of a playoff crunch. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. But then I liked a lot of what the Raptors were able to do just, you know, with respect to defense. It was really, as you look at the numbers, it was a defensive sort of night, specifically late in that second half for them. And they were active and they're long. When you have OG Anunoby playing the two, you're long. And that's a good thing in the NBA.
Yeah, it's crazy. They've been playing small all year long. Nick Nurse, how are you going into this one? We're going to play big. All right. Big time Matt Devlin with his big time professional microphone is sticking around. He is the co-host for the second hour here on Tim and Friends. We'll talk Raptors. We'll also talk maybe the T word, tank. Not like the other one I said. It's just tank. Don't worry, Matty D. But after the break, we'll bring in Dan Shulman. We'll talk a little baseball. He'll call Olympic basketball, but he'll also call the Jays and the Royals tonight on Sportsnet. We'll talk it next with Danny and Matty on Tim and Friends. Back on Tim and Friends, a day after Bo Bichette walked off the Yankees, the Blue Jays are in Kansas City to open up a 4-game series with the Royals, the same stadium Bichette made his Major League debut in. Jamie Campbell, Joe Sill will get you ready for first pitch. Blue Jays Central, 7:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. East, Ontario, West, and Pacific. Just check your local listings. Manager Charlie Montoyo saying just moments ago it'll be Anthony Kay on the bump. We're going lefties, kids, as the Jays face Jacob Junis for the Royals. Montoyo also saying Ross Stripling has been placed on the IL, mild right flexor strain. Got it good. And since you understood, some more injury woes for the Jays. I told you it was the day of the voices. Joining Matt Devlin and I now is ESPN's college basketball and baseball, Sportsnet's baseball, and now apparently the voice, because he doesn't have enough jobs. We were talking to Virk about it earlier. The voice of basketball at the Olympic Games on CBC, Danny Shulman. What's up, buddy?
How are you, boys? Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I'll be doing it from Toronto, so not physically at the Olympic Games, virtually at the Olympic Games, but this has always been a legit bucket list thing for me. You know, I think I've said this to you, Tim, when you and Sid would ask, there are only like four things in my life that I love, and Canada and basketball are two of them. So if I could mix them together somehow, this would be a wonderful thing. And I'm extremely, extremely excited to call basketball for the men and the women. Obviously, the women, listen, they're medal contenders. We know that. And hopefully the men will do what they have to do in Victoria, and they'll get to Tokyo as well.
Matty D, have you ever called basketball games at 3 a.m. in the morning?
I have never called basketball at 3 a.m. However, I've been with Jack at 3 a.m. and we've called a few things.
But never basketball.
But that is, an undeniable thrill. I mean, when you think about where Canada basketball is headed, as you well know, Dan, the women are there and the men certainly are headed in the right direction.
I hope so. Obviously, they won't have Jamal Murray, and I don't know that he would have been able to play in Victoria anyways, because Denver, probably with him would have gotten deep enough that he couldn't have played in the qualifier. But we all love play. The only game we love playing more than, what order would you hit the Blue Jays? What would your batting order for the Blue Jays be is, who would you have on the team for Canada in a Victoria? And, it depends on who gets deep into the playoffs. It depends on health. It depends on contracts. But I'm still hopeful that a lot of the best guys will be there, and they'll round it out with some players who have been a big help to Canada internationally. And maybe just as importantly, it doesn't look like Giannis is going to be there. And that's a huge part of this whole story as well.
We'll see how far the Bucks go as well for Giannis in Greece in Victoria. All right, we're Blue Jay Central coming up in mere moments from now. We just heard the news. Stripling goes to the IL. And, Dan, it looks like we got our wish. We're going to see some lefties here.
This is the first time ever the Blue Jays will start four lefties in a four-game series. So it'll be Kay and Ryu and Ray and Mats, and that'll be very interesting to see. But the Blue Jays are putting the best available arms out there right now. And at some point, they got to get healthy. But we've talked about it a lot. One thing they did do in the offseason was really improve their pitching depth just in case. And guess what? Just in case has knocked on the door and kicked it down in the first couple of weeks of the season with all of these injuries. So we'll see how stretched out Anthony Kay is. I don't think he's a 90 to 100 pitch guy tonight. If he can go four innings twice through the order, 70 pitches, something like that, that would be great. But we'll wait and see. The Blue Jays aren't putting, at least publicly, a definitive number on it. But after him, like, you could see Tanner Roark in a 2 to 3 inning role, depending on the situation. After that, the bullpen is thin. And right now it's just kind of try to do the best you can through this four game stretch. And then you got the off day Monday. You got the off day Thursday. You got the same thing the following week, and try and catch your breath and regroup then.
It's interesting, Dan, because you look at, this team and what they've been able to do early on, and you spoke to the depth that they have, and now all of a sudden you kind of hit that patch. But that's so important, given, the fact here they are 6-6, they go out on the road. It's something, though, they'll deal with more than likely throughout the course of the season, right? Baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody will, Matty. I mean, everybody in baseball is going to deal with it this crazy year, going from 60 to 162. And again, unfortunately, the Blue Jays have really been hit by the injury bug. And not to say everything is great, because not everything is great, but you know what? They've played the Yankees in 6 of their 12 games. They've had an extreme number of pitcher injuries. George Springer hasn't played. Teoscar Hernandez is on the COVID IL, and he hasn't hit. Lourdes Gurriel hasn't hit. With the exception of Juan Alejandro Kirk home run, the catchers haven't hit. Biggio hasn't hit as well as he did last year. Point being, it could be worse. Like, if I just said everything that I just said to you, except for the record, you would probably say 3-9, 4-8, and they're 6-6. So that's the good news. Some of the guys who haven't been hitting have to start hitting better. And hopefully at some point in the next few weeks, some of these injured arms get back in there. Because like you said, this is going to be it's going to be a war of attrition. It's going to be a constant test to have enough healthy pitching the entire season.
I know the stats magician Scotty Carson is sitting beside you. Are the bats awakening from their slumber, Dan?
You're asking me to see into the future? Is that what you're asking me to do right now?
I'm asking you if we haven't seen it maybe over the last four games.
I see. Yeah.
And
Bichette, Guerrero, and Grichuk doing great. And Rowdy Tellez to me is a very, very important guy, because he's a left-handed power bat in a lineup that is otherwise largely right-handed, obviously. So the fact that Rowdy hit one, you know, 400 and whatever feet the other day, and he went 4 for 12 in the last three games, that's important. I believe in him, and I said it often before the season. I think he figured it out last year, and I think we got to see what he is. Lourdes Gurriel does not look right to me, does not look great. He looks jumpy at the plate. Kevin Biggio does not look like he looked last year. Those are two very other very important guys. But you know what, Tim, Matty, they need George Springer. They got to get George Springer. And he's not going to play in Kansas City. He's not going to play in Boston. Hopefully, by the time the Blue Jays get to Tropicana Field, which is about a week from now, hopefully Springer is back then. And hopefully Teoscar is not that far behind.
It is a long list. And I wonder, and I'm asking you this from the standpoint of what the Raptors went through, you know, playing out of Tampa and early on. I understand you're in the spring training home, Dunedin. You know, has that been a factor, you think, early on at all or no? Just two totally different situations, two totally different things. I agree with you. The fact that they're 6-6, given everything, it's just amazing. But are there other elements as well kind of swirling around or no?
I don't think so. You know, they had the Buffalo situation last year, right? So they've dealt with it. And last year there was uncertainty at the beginning of the year. They didn't even get to play in Buffalo for the first homestand. This year, at least, they knew in advance, here's where you're going to be for the first three homestands. And they'll know in advance if they're going to Buffalo or Toronto or staying in Dunedin longer. So I think they're used to it, and I think they're handling it well. And in some ways, it could be more of a disadvantage for the opponents who never don't get a chance to get used to it. But, you know, July, August, ask me again, and we'll see. Over 6 months, it could get old, but we don't know. But hopefully they'll get to Toronto at some point.
All right, we're about an hour away from Blue Jays Central. That's coming your way at 7:30 Eastern. Hockey Central coming your way right now. We say goodbye to Dan Shulman, but we appreciate his time. Thank you, Dan.
Appreciate you guys as well. Thanks, guys.
Matty, can you stick around? Dan.
I'm around.
All right, Matty D, stick around.
No place to go.
We're going to talk some basketball. Hockey Central coming your way.
I'm watching Dan Shulman eventually.
You and I both. Actually, there's probably a lot of us right here. Hockey Central coming up next on Sportsnet. We continue on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Matt Devlin, I will talk Raptors, and then separately we'll go our ways and watch a little baseball. Back at you in 60. I told you, 60 seconds right back at you, Matt Devlin and Tim McAuliffe. This is Tim and Friends. Listen, Matty, during the commercial break, I noticed a tweet from Jay Casimiri, who writes in and says, Devlin and Shulman, you're a Tom Cheek and Bob Cole away from the Canadian Mount Rushmore of broadcasting, and I agree here.
That is, I don't know about that. I'll be
who's on your Mount Rushmore? You're a student of the game. Who are the guys that? And I don't, you don't have to give me four, but who are the guys that and women that you appreciate the most when it comes to play-by-play?
Well, you know, look, I think you know, here in Canada, I think excluding me, he certainly kind of hit the nail on the head. And there's so many others. I mean, Chris Cuthbert, I think of, you know, a lot of, you know, different announcers here and, you know, obviously, you know, living here for 13 years and, you know, listening to Bob Cole certainly, you know, is somebody that, you know, I just really appreciated. And when I first arrived here, I had a producer that I was able to talk to on a nightly basis about the history of broadcasting in Canada. I'll say this with respect to the U.S., you know, obviously from a population standpoint, there's a lot of announcers out there, but I remember listening to Vin Scully and thinking, I can't do that. I can't do that. I mean, that is so poetic and it's such a different level. And then I remember listening to Jack Buck and I thought, wow, that, you know, I loved Jack Buck, day in and day out on baseball. I just, to me, he's in the upper echelon. But Bob Costas, certainly, and Vin Scully, certainly, and Jack Buck, and people forget that Vin and Jack both did football, and Al Michaels, how could you leave him out? Yeah. Doc Emrick, how do you leave him out? And now the new wave of, you know, Joe Buck and, you know, Jim Nance, who's been doing national television in the U.S. since he was 26 years of age, and Kevin Harlan, and, you know, the greatness of Marv Albert. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
All right. You named all of my guys except for one. And I know that you were trying to cover every base, but my dad spent time in Windsor and Detroit, so I got to go Ernie Harwell on that, too.
I agree with Ernie Harwell, and I'll tell you this. When I used to call, I know we're kind of diverting from, you know, other topics, but when I used to call minor league baseball, in the back of, I think it was like Newsweek magazine, there was an ad for a company that used to sell cassette tapes, audio cassette tapes of old broadcasts. And I remember ordering a ton of Red Barber, Vin Scully, Ernie Harwell, Bob Allen, all these different, Mel Allen, pardon me, Bob was a Houston sportscaster. But, you know, Mel Allen, all these different announcers, because what I wanted to hear from them at the time as a young student of trying to learn the game, how were they calling the game when they didn't have the statistics that we have today? Yeah. And even when I started in broadcasting, there wasn't, you know, the internet to go and search things up. In fact, it was Tom Cheek who actually handed me his scorecard, ripped it out of the back of his scorebook, and then also showed me how he would keep track on a daily basis, everything for the Blue Jays, handwritten. And I followed that script that he gave me from 1993 all the way through my minor year, minor league baseball announcing career.
Awesome. Matty Devlin joining me. Tim and Friends is the name of the show. I want to get everyone caught up to date on what transpired last night, because it was a great night of action in the NBA. Despite missing just about every guard in the roster, the Raptors beat the Spurs 117-112 in Tampa. OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam had 22 and 20, respectively. Now, Kem Birch got the start, matched his career high with 14 points, or season high with 14 points, along with 6 boards and 2 blocks. Malachi Flynn continues his development while he struggled from the floor. He was just 4 of 15. He did have 7 assists, 0 turnovers in 32 minutes. Meanwhile, the Bulls lost to the Magic, so the Raptors are now just one game back of the final play-in spot in the East, the repechage, as I'm calling it. Adding to the Bulls' problems, Zach LaVine has entered into the league's health and safety protocol and is expected to miss 10 to 14 days. Meanwhile, the Raptors injury report continues to grow as well. Team announced a short time ago, Kyle Lowry will rest for a third straight game against Orlando tomorrow, and Siakam and Anunoby will also be rested. Gary Trent Jr., DeAndre Bembry, and Jalen Harris listed as doubtful. All right, back to last night. Steph Curry continued his ridiculous play of late in a blowout win over the Thunder. Curry scored 42, including 11 three-pointers. Yes, it did sound like Mario. He didn't play in the fourth quarter. 42, didn't play in the fourth quarter. Second straight game with 10-plus threes, and his 8th straight game with at least 30 points. And then there was a great finish in Memphis. The Grizzlies' Grayson Allen, close to 90% free throw shooter and a player everyone loves to hate, had a chance to ice the game at the free throw line. He misses 2 free throws with Memphis up to 2 seconds to go. Missed them both, opening the door to Luka Doncic, and Luka did Luka things.
Got to get it in. Here's Luka. Gets it away. It's good! A Doncic dagger! He whips it
three.
As he was stumbling, he somehow got it to go.
Matty, Luka knew it all along. Like, he didn't stop. He knew it was a three, and he knew it was good.
That he did, and I go back to that draft, and I think to myself, could you imagine Devin Booker, Luka Doncic, and now Chris Paul in Phoenix? And you think about even Atlanta, who drafted him and then traded him to Dallas. Luka Doncic is next level. Has the size, has the ball handling skills, obviously can shoot. To me, When you look at players that can elevate your team, he is one of them, and he's doing it in a hurry in Dallas.
Oh, is he ever. It adds to my country crush of Slovenia. I don't know how they qualified for a World Cup, Slovenia did, with a million people there out of Europe. It's like Mississauga qualifying for a World Cup. It's unbelievable. The Slovenians are great athletes. All right, so let's move on to the Raptors. And this is an interesting situation now. We have more rest from the Raptors, just as it seemed as though they might be able to gain some ground on the Bulls and Zach LaVine going into COVID protocols. I mean, this has been I know we're in a different age in 2021, but the Raptors have gone through is unbelievable. Is it not, Matty?
It is. I mean, it was something that I mentioned with Dan Shulman, and obviously, as he mentioned, you go back to last season, the Blue Jays had that experience of Buffalo. And for the Toronto Raptors, I think it's understandable why they got off to a 2-8 start. And then you look at the next stretch, which was 15-9, and then all of a sudden health and safety protocols, and then trying to emerge from that. And we're seeing it now in Vancouver and what's happening there. And so, for the Raptors at this stage, I think there is an element here. Condensed schedule. It is something that is always, as you know, Tim, a hot topic, right? Injuries, yeah, and all of those things that are happening. And they're playing a ton of basketball, just wrapped up 4 games in 5 nights. And, you know, here they come once again. And so I understand, given everything that they've been through over the course of that 6-week stretch, of saying, you know what, let's take this slowly. You know, let's make sure that everybody is okay. And then also within this, here's something that's really important outside from the health of your players, which is the ultimate of what is important. But it's also to find out about Malachi Flynn, to find out about Kem Birch, Fred Gillespie, the new Fred. Do you want to give him a second 10-day contract, right? Who are the other players that you want to see? Because you have some decisions to make this summer. And that's extremely important to have that foundation, because this isn't a year. They had 15 G League games. And what are the Raptors good at? They're good at analyzing.
Drafting and developing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is now you're getting, you know, Malachi Flynn is getting game action, NBA level development, and that cannot be replaced.
You know, it's funny because, I understand when you oversimplify things, especially on Twitter, you don't have the characters to get into nuance, but too often we take what is put on Twitter as gospel when it's just really oversimplified stuff. But Raptors Twitter is saying that this rest is tank. And for me, it's like a combination of, okay, this has been a season from hell. Let's see what we got. And if it means that we miss the playoffs and we're not at home, so be it. Like, I don't think it's as simple as this rest is tank. I think it's all of the things that you just mentioned. Would you or would you not agree with that?
I agree with you in that regard. And you go back to, you know, Brian Burke and what he always said about the lottery, because you don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, are you going to get Sidney Crosby? Are you not? Are you going to get Austin Matthews? Are you not? You don't know. And so this is what we do know. Every year, Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster and Nick Nurse, they go into a season and their ultimate goal is to win it all. They are beyond the point of, as we all know, it's why they went all in during the championship run, and understandably and rightly so, given how this team had progressed. And they finally said, you know what, enough is, we have this opportunity to make this deal. We're going to do it. And I think along the way, you have to assess, where are you and what is your opportunity once you get in? Every organization has a different approach. Chicago, They're desperately trying to get into the playoffs. They have only been to an Eastern Conference Finals one time since Michael Jordan retired. So this is an organization that's hard to believe that they're currently playing the way that they're playing. You have Washington, watch out for them. They're coming, right? And they need to, based upon the moves that they've made, to make a push as well. So for the Raptors, it gives you an opportunity here to see some young players. That's extremely important. And then also it makes sure that everybody around you, hey, let's get healthy, because Pascal plays a ton of minutes. Yeah. He was the one that mentioned that I've lost some weight, right? And then OG coming back. We know that he had a calf injury that, by the way, you know, Marcus Smart in Boston sidelined a long time with the calf injury. So condensed schedule, other factors, Tampa, and I think it's the right approach for the Raptors, how they're approaching this.
I will say I like getting a look at the youngsters. Even Freddie yesterday, the new Freddie.
New Freddie.
Contesting the DeMar DeRozan dunk and then getting dunked on right. I know it's a 10-day thing, but I absolutely positively love two contests in a row, even if you get dunked on and the dude flexes on you. Like that's and let's just try and convince the Raptors to sign Kem Birch so that he can go with Canada to Victoria. If he has a deal, you know, set in place, guaranteed, maybe we can convince him to sign this thing so that he can go with Canada to Victoria.
The other one, interesting one is going to be Kelly Olynyk, right? So you're going to have a couple there. But I've always liked Kem Birch. I've always felt that in today's NBA, you need that 6'8", 6'9", active, athletic, can get to the rim, can block shots, right? And I talked to Nick Nurse yesterday. He said the first thing is, you know, told Kem, hey, be a rim protector, play D, everything else will come. And we saw that last night. We've seen it in the three games in which he has played. The part of his game that has yet to expand, and it will if he ends up staying with the Toronto Raptors, and that is three-point shooting. Prior to this year, he had only taken two threes, and we know that in this offense, that's something that's going to be available to him. And, you know, so I think he's now like 5 for 25 or something like that in his career for three-point shooting, but that's something to maybe look at. But I've always liked his, you know, activity, and that's somebody that is important coming off of the bench in today's NBA. And Gillespie, you know, to me, you look at him and say, okay, what would a year be with the Raptors? Two-way contract, maybe, you know, is he somebody, you know, that, you know, the Raptors could, you know, ultimately get, you know, some valuable minutes from and service from?
Understood. Either you got more mail or you just got a token on Super Mario Brothers, one of the two. I know you've heard this before from Jack Armstrong, but will you stick around for Last Call?
I will, of course.
All right, yes. We'll do Last Call with Jesse Rubinoff.
So somebody has to lead you home.
And Matt Devlin next, without a doubt. We'll tie a bow on this baby next with Last Call on Tim and Friends. Last Call, everybody. Jesse Rubinoff will take me and Matty Devlin through Last Call here on Tim and Friends. Go ahead.
Let's do it. Matty Devlin joining us. Let's start with some basketball. The 2020 class of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame will finally be inducted on May 15th. The class is one of the strongest ever, featuring Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. Now, it was announced today that Michael Jordan will be the presenter for Kobe, David Robinson will present for Tim Duncan, and Isaiah Thomas for Kevin Garnett. Matty D., who do you want to do your presentation at your Hall of Fame induction?
Oh, my God.
What a question, huh? I mean, that's loaded. What a question. I mean, that is, I'm gonna say both Jack and Leo. How's that?
That's
both
it.
Jack and Leo.
That's nice. That's a veteran answer right there from Matty Devlin. And my answer is anybody but Sid. Anybody but Sid.
Look, he has to wake up too early in the morning now. He wouldn't even be up by the time that thing. Right? He wouldn't even be up at night. It's like 7:30. He goes to bed.
I don't think he's got to worry too much anyway.
Well, who knows about that? An impressive win for Toronto FC last night. They beat the reigning Mexican League champs Club León 2-1 and 3-2 on aggregate to advance to the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. TFC won despite missing several key players to injury, including Jozy Altidore, Alejandro Pozuelo, Chris Mavinga, and Jonathan Osorio. Tim, how impressive was that win?
Listen, you could tell we're showing viz of how happy new coach and captain were. Mm-hmm. Michael Bradley was ecstatic. And I think for Canadian soccer, listen, we were waiting a long time for TFC to start paying dividends to Canadian soccer. Mm-hmm. But you look out on the field yesterday, and the oldest Canadian out there was Richie Larea, who's turning into a player. He's 26 years old. But there were four more who are 21 or younger on the field against a legit Mexican champ in the middle of their season. TFC hasn't even played yet. Man, full marks for that moving through on aggregate for TFC. And it's nice to see the Canadians get some shine there, too.
Very encouraging. The WNBA draft goes tonight. Charlie Collier of Texas is expected to go first overall to the Dallas Wings. And Arizona's Ari McDonald, the breakout star of the NCAA tournament, is also expected to be a top five pick. Now the question is, Matt, do you think Toronto will get a WNBA franchise anytime soon?
I should hope. I mean, look, I hope so. For those that don't know, called New York Liberty Games with Doris Burke back in the late 90s, as well as Jack Armstrong. I hosted WNBA draft nights in the past, and I'm a huge fan of it. And I think that it would go, go over well here. I really do. And I think that right now with 12 teams, you start thinking about expansion. I would think Toronto's got to be at the top of the list. And I think for the growth of the game, and we're seeing it more and more, I think it'd just be really vital. I mean, we go back to that parade and the championship, and you know, we had the Carter effect, and now we're going to have the championship effect. And that's not only going to be for boys, but it's also going to be for little girls that are, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age that are dreaming about playing professional basketball. And wouldn't it be something that one day they play here in Toronto for a WNBA team? That, to me, would just be outstanding.
You mentioned it earlier with Shulman, too. We might see a little podium effect for the national women's team.
Great point.
In the Olympics this summer, because they are ranked 4th in the world. Real deal, Lisa Tomitis and company.
I
would love to see a WNBA team in Canada, and I think Toronto is a natural.
Yeah, just watching those games during the March Madness tournament too, like the women's games, all those unbelievable. Canadians.
Yeah,
and you know, they're at an interesting time too, because the conversations have come up about early entry into the draft, right? And so there's a lot of things that are happening, and so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the decisions are here over the course of the next year or so with that, you know, because currently you have to be a four-year player at the university level. If you're an international player, you can be drafted at the age of 20. So there's a lot of things that are happening that are going to be positive for players, and it's exciting to see, an exciting time.
If I'm Paige Beckers, I just go to the Australian League.
I know. It's like
although
4 years.
UConn is a pro franchise. Yeah. What am I talking about? Never mind.
Let's go to hockey. We've got a big East Division matchup coming up tonight on Sportsnet 360 at 7 Eastern. The Islanders are currently second in the division, 2 points back of the Capitals, while the Bruins are currently in fourth place. Tim, which team made the better move at the deadline? The Bruins adding Taylor Hall, or the Islanders picking up both Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac?
I like the Islanders' move a little bit more, but Taylor Hall could make me eat my words. I mean, listen, right now that's a two-goal scorer, and everyone knows it. And there's never been more hype for a two-goal scorer being moved at the deadline in my life. But we all know he has this ability. I'm going to say it's the Islanders, but Taylor Hall, I thought the Adam Larson-Taylor Hall move was okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was a terrible move for Edmonton at the time, and he made me eat my words with a Hart Trophy. So he could do it again, but right now I would take what Lou did.
Yeah, Justin Bourne was talking on Twitter the other day. It just seems like Taylor Hall's lacking confidence at the moment, and the Bruins are going to have to rehab him as a player.
You know, he's a big hockey guy.
Yeah. Well, look, at the Brew, it's a good place to find it, Boston, right? And I agree with you, Tim. I like the Islanders' move, but it's going to be interesting to see how Taylor Hall really looks at this opportunity, right? Is he going to feel the pressure of, hey, you know, things did not go. I thought the Buffalo signing was the perfect spot, right? 1 year deal, get in there, do what you do, play next to Eichel. It's going to go well. We all know what happened there. Is he going to feel the pressure of, I got to make this happen, right? Because I just signed a one. Or is it going to be a situation where he looks around and he feels a little bit of relief? Okay, I'm here. And while I'm a guy, I don't have to be necessarily the guy, but I'm going to be one of the guys. And does he allow that game kind of to come to him and recapture it? Because it's been a while now for him.
Yeah, without a doubt. 30 seconds left,
yeah.
Jesse.
Matty D, just want to get your take on these. Team Canada and the Bay unveiled the team kit for Tokyo 2020 on Wednesday. These are the denim closing ceremony jackets, and they're not being received well at all. Can you blame the folks out there for not liking what they see with these?
Canadian tuxedo.
Okay.
They're a bit much.
It's a Canadian tuxedo.
Okay.
Hey,
you go to the Olympics and you get that. Okay.
Matty, thanks for doing this. I always like chatting with you.
Anytime.
There
the
is.
Best. Anytime.
Matt Devlin, everybody. That does it for us. We'll talk to you again tomorrow for Jesse Rubinoff and the crew. Thank you.